16. We're off and rolling again on the podcast, a weekly tour of sports and pop culture. This is episode 6. This is your host, Bobby Manning, and this is the show that doesn't make up stories for retweets. We're off and rolling on another great episode. We thank you for being aboard again. You can follow me at Real Bob Manning on Twitter. You can follow the show at The Bobcast Show. And we thank you, as always, for following along and would appreciate if you gave us a nice rate, a nice subscribe on iTunes. clnsradio.com/bobcastitunes is the link to our iTunes page. And as always, we thank CLNS Radio, the leading provider of audio and video coverage of your favorite Boston sports teams, for backing our show. You can find them at CLNS Radio on Twitter and on Facebook at facebook.com/CLNSFans. And be sure to download the CLNS Radio free mobile podcast app. We're on there. Celtics Beats on there. Celtics Stuff Live. Countless other great shows that deserve your listen as well. So we're off and rolling. It's the dead of summer. The All-Star Game was on Tuesday. We had the Home Run Derby. We had the ESPYs yesterday. But not a lot going on in the sports world late in July through August. There's some baseball games. There's a lot of minor things going on, NBA Summer League, but it's a good time to break into some of these smaller but still very important stories going around in the world of sports and pop culture. Last week we had Mel Smith on, an incredible conversation about the music industry today, some of the great things going on over there, innovations, technology, all that. That was episode 5. You'll want to check that out if you didn't hear it. But one thing we're looking forward to, myself and across high schools, colleges, and the pros, is the coming of football season. Late July, early August is when you start looking off into the distance and of those first games that start kicking off around the beginning of September. And as some of you may know, as some of you may not know, I got my very early start in sports media covering a great, great football team, the Peabody Tanners, my high school football team. And some of you are going to ask, why are you getting into a local football team on a national sports show right now? And I think that will become a little more relevant to you with the great, incredible athlete we're bringing on the show today. A good friend of mine, a guy who's going to make waves at Assumption College next year, Doug Santos. We're going to bring him in just a few minutes, but I started covering my high school team my sophomore year after they went 0-11. It was just a despicable season. Nothing went right. There were controversies around the team. There were arrests. There was just a lot of bad stuff going on, and they kind of just became the laughingstock of the halls. And this is a program that wasn't always bad. This was a team that won state Super Bowls. They had an illustrious past behind them, and to go 0-11... with some of the brutal losses they took. They didn't just lose close games. They were losing by double digits, 40 points. It was brutal. And along comes some new faces. One of them was Doug Santos, and what happened was incredible from there. So Doug, just to give you a little background before we bring him in, he's an upcoming freshman at Assumption College in Worcester, Massachusetts, of course. And he helped the Peabody Tanners go from 3-8 in his first year to the playoffs in his second year, which was his junior year here. They won a playoff game as big underdogs against Lexington High in the Division I playoffs. And after losing countless seniors off that incredible team they had my junior year, they came back again off a 1-3 start to the next season and made the playoffs again as the same seed. They beat Malden High as an underdog again, and they played two brilliant playoff games, some of the best games I've watched in my life, even compared to some professional games that I've watched. So he finished his career with just a stunning, record-breaking 4,856 yards in 3 seasons, 64 touchdowns, which tied the record. He's a native of Brazil, and he just has an incredible story that we're going to talk to him about today. He's lived between Quincy, Mass, and, of course, my native Peabody, Mass. And he was a Boston Globe All-Scholastic athlete. he's going to Division II, and you got to ask, why is this story important? Because he really helped reestablish a football program in a school. And outside of the satisfaction we get from watching sports as fans, between, you know, counting the yards, watching the highlight plays, it really is a platform to get an opportunity to have a voice, get an opportunity to get a college education, and really get an opportunity to learn life lessons along the way that you can apply to other parts of life as well. I mean, sports goes a lot more beyond the typical watching experience that we all enjoy on a day-to-day basis. And that's some of the things we're going to talk about with Doug Santos. And we're bringing him aboard the weekly tour right now. Doug, it's late Thursday night. How are you doing, my man?
I'm doing great. How are you, Bobby?
It's been good. It's been a good summer. Doug and I just graduated from Peabody High School together.
Correct.
Over the summer, he's been working at the YMCA, getting ready for the football season. How's the summer been, Doug?
My summer's been pretty great so far. You know, I've been just training and working hard.
It's been a good one. So I want to go back to the very beginning of your journey. And I don't know how much you really want to get into it, but it's an incredible story. I mean, you started off in Brazil, and I kind of want to know, it's something we never really talked about before in the past. How does a kid from Brazil get into football, which is really an American game?
To be honest, I didn't really know about football until I got here to America. My sport was supposed to be soccer. You know, all the Brazilians love soccer. But once I came to America, I started figuring it a little bit more about football when I started hanging out with my friend called Ray Linatopia. He was actually a big flag football at first, but then he decided to start playing tackle football. And me and him always used to joke around, like, oh, imagine if I played. And my mother, I asked my mom one day, I was like, Mom, can you sign me up for football? And she was like, that's not happening. And I'm like, all right, whatever. So I talked to Ray about it. He was like, oh, dude, my dad knows the owner. He could just sign you up. So I was like, all right. So he signed me up, and I was clueless my first year. I was one of the faster kids on the team. I was one of the strongest kids on the team, but my football IQ, zero. I did not understand one thing about football. It was probably the most difficult thing that I ever became part of. But as time went on, my second year, I started learning more and more and more. And then eventually, the time that I was actually going to play running back for the first time, I ended up moving to Quincy. And I was playing defense for my first 2 years as a nose guard. And when I moved to Quincy, one of the coaches that I played for, he realized how fast and strong I was. So he didn't decide. He knew I didn't know much about football, so he decided to put me at quarterback. All he said to me was, you stay hot, you grab the ball, and you run. That's all you got to do. I ended up scoring 20 touchdowns, 20 rushing touchdowns, and I actually had, I think, probably like 2 passing touchdowns, and one was in the championship game to win the championship. A tie game, last 14 seconds of the game. So as that happened, I ended up having to go, I was going to high school in Quincy. My freshman year, I knew I wasn't going to be able to play quarterback because the quarterbacks needed to know how to throw and be accurate and know more about football than what I knew. So I ended up going to play running back, and I was horrific. I had raw talent, but still didn't know the game as much as I should have known as a running back. And I actually had a kid beating me out for my position. I obviously put in the work. You know, I ran, I did my workouts, whatever, to get ready for my freshman year. But it came down that this kid was just better than me. He's been playing his whole life, and ever since he was a kid, he knew how to play football. He knew how to play running back. He knew his holes. He knew how to read blocks. He knew how to, like, check down whatever it was, you know. So he knew how to play football, but he ended up beating me out for my position. So that's when I ended up moving to Peabody, and my sophomore year came along, and that was the year when I came in and I actually found out how bad Peabody had been, you know, how horrible they had been the past 2 years. And it was hard for me, you know, because I came in, I was like, yeah, I got to make a difference. But how am I going to make a difference when some of my teammates are smoking weed before practice and drinking alcohol and getting caught doing stupid shit, you know? So that kind of just set me out like, is this like really what I'm going to be able to do? It wasn't just on the football field either, though. Like, my home life was kind of tough on me a little bit. My mom had moved to Brazil. She was going to be there for a certain amount of time. She ended up having to stay there for a longer time. I ended up getting in trouble. And then it caused my whole life to change around, but it was for the best. That's the first year Coach Betts also came in, and he took over the team after Vlasic. He brought in sort of a new attitude. You know, he brought in more of a winning attitude. And even though our players from the previous years, 0-10 years, they were still there, you know. So they were seniors that year. And I think the thing is that killed us was that they were so used to losing that they didn't know how to win.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I want to give our listeners some context who didn't really know the situation very well. You were bouncing back between Peabody and Quincy, and when you came back here, there was a situation in place with the old coach who started off the season 0-11 that terrible freshman year.
Right.
And a lot of those same people who came back to that team next year were part of that 0-11 team. So these were a lot of the players on this team were older than you, had been in that locker room, had been playing for that team. So you come into the scene, and I got to ask you about that situation. What was it like establishing yourself with some of the guys who are already there, even though they didn't have very much success the year before?
Right. Well, I came in my Quincy year, even though I wasn't the best running back, we went 11-0. We went 11 wins, 0 losses. So when I came to Peabody my sophomore year, I had like a mentality of winning, you know? Like, I was ready to win.
Mm-hmm.
And coming into like the summer workouts, I always heard like bad mouth about the team. Like, oh, we're probably going to go 0-10 again. Our team's probably going to suck. We don't have any linemen. We don't have anyone that can run the ball and all this crap. And I was just like, all right, well, I don't care what you guys are saying. I'm going to do my part. And whatever, if we end up 0-10 at the end of the season, I could say I gave it my all, you know? But once Betancourt came in, it was a whole different story. He changed not just mine, but everyone else's mentality. You know, obviously, like, the seniors that were already there, they had been losing for 3 years in a row. So I don't know if he could have really said a lot to make them change their minds, like, oh my gosh, we can win. Like, I don't know how much he could have said, but I know for a fact the juniors and the sophomores, it really impacted them, you know, and I was part of that sophomore year. I feel like he made a very big change in our heads.
Yeah.
And what we could do with it, you know?
Well, a big thing was, like you said, the 11-0 that you brought into the locker room coming from Quincy. And Mark Betancourt, for everyone who doesn't know him listening in, was a Super Bowl winning quarterback at Peabody High himself. He coached the baseball team for years prior to that, had a lot of success with them. And I know you're very close with him yourself. What were some of the things you talked about with him when you both came into that first year? I know a lot of people try to follow the lead of winners like you and him, but for some of the people who didn't really buy into that, what did you say to people like that between you and Coach?
Well, my sophomore year, to be honest, I was kind of I had the work ethic, but I did stupid things. You know, I did teenager things that didn't really impact like the way I played football, but impacted my home life and what people thought about me. And I guess Coach Betts, he knew a lot about me that I didn't even know he knew. So my sophomore year was kind of awkward, you know. I didn't know he knew much about it. And he's a big dude, 6'3", probably 300 pounds, you know. So it was kind of
biggest hands
scary
I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, right. It was kind of scary talking to him here and there. So we didn't really talk much that year of my football season. But as time went on, we became closer and closer, obviously, when I when I became his foster child.
That first year, you guys won 3 games. It was a little bit of progress. You saw success on the field in your own right. What was it like kind of seeing the community come back a little bit as you guys started to win a few games? And there was progress. There wasn't a whole lot of success in the team as a whole, but the needle started pointing in the right direction.
Right. Well, definitely winning our first, what was it? I think it was, actually it was a good feeling. Our first game of the season when we were close to Lynn English, we I think it was like we lost by 2 touchdowns. But the thing is, we had a lot of mistakes also, so that's what killed us the most. And so we kind of knew we could play a little bit. And I think it just had to do a lot with the mentality of the kids, what they wanted to do with it. And obviously that felt great. When we won 2 other games, you know, it was a better feeling then.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was a lot of people starting to come in their own around you besides your own success. I mean, coming into that junior year, Mike Raymond really started to expand as a quarterback. And on the offensive line, Ethan Mercedes and some of those guys started to show success. So there was a lot of confidence, it felt like, when I was following the team coming into that junior year. Seeing those teammates succeed around you, there was new attention on the team. What was the feeling coming into that junior year off of some of the success of the sophomore year?
Well, I knew that all the negativity was gone. You know, the negativity from the senior class of having that mentality like, oh, we're going to probably lose this game. That was done with because Coach Betts really, he really got us to fall for what he was saying. Winning comes first, hard work, like all that. He really embraced it to us that if we want to win, we got to work hard and we got to stay focused. And once we started doing that our sophomore year a little bit, our junior year we came in knowing that we can do this. You know, we could do whatever we want to do with this season. We have the talent. All we got to do is focus and work hard and be consistent. And that was it. And once we did that, everything started clicking.
It was a roaring start. You guys won so many games out of the gate that junior year. The crowd started coming back. You guys sort of had an identity as a team that people could really connect with. And then by the time you got to the playoffs that season, there was just so much hype around that Lexington game. And you guys come out, stun them in one of the best games you'll ever see. And then take a journey to Everett and back and forth with one of the best teams in the state. What was the feeling watching that team grow to a point where you could compete with a powerhouse in the state like Everett? And what was the confidence of the team like at that point?
Well, we always knew we could do it since the beginning. We had a lot of confidence. And winning that Lexington game, knowing how many people were in that stands, really, really gave us even more confidence, you know, that saying that, like, it's not just us that believe in each other. We have way more people that believe in us than we think. And that's what really, I think that really boosted our confidence level a lot. And obviously we didn't.
Yeah, it became bigger than football.
Exactly. It became bigger than football. It became more of Peabody football back on the map, you know? And since the beginning, we were talking about that. Like, what is our goal? You know, and Coach Betts, Coach Festa, Coach Lamazzi, Coach Falco, those guys all played in the Super Bowl game. They all played at Peabody when they had a winning record. So what they were teaching us is we got to learn how to win. We got to know how to win. Mm-hmm. And Peabody pride needed to come back. And that was one of our biggest goals we had.
And it's really cool because our mayor here, of course, Mayor Brandon Court, preaches that a lot too in the community. You know, having pride in Peabody, making this a place where you want to have businesses, see your family grow, have success in your own life. And to see the football team, which football is huge here in Peabody. People rally around it. People have been huge fans. And you saw it with how successful you guys were. There were 50, 60, 70-year-old guys in the stands coming to watch you guys.
Yeah.
So outside of the football field, and like I said, where it became bigger than football, I saw you juggling so many different roles between being a performer on the field. You were sort of an ambassador of the team throughout the school, you know, telling everyone to come to the games, be in the stands, and even recruiting new people to the team. I saw you doing a lot of that. How hard was it to juggle all those different roles?
Well, I'm trying to be as humble as I can, but as a leader, you got to do stuff like that, you know? You got to be able to like you're saying, juggle things around. You know, you got to be able to do more than one thing at a time. And I feel like that my junior year season, my season, it really helped me be able to be more confident in myself and be a leader, you know, because even though I was having a tremendous season, people were watching me and they wanted to talk to me. They wanted to just be around me. And as those people wanted to be around me, I got to use what I had and teach them, like, oh, you could be the same way. You could come out and play football. You could have all those people watching you. And I feel like that really got to them a little bit, you know, and that helped us get more plays.
Mm-hmm. As you guys started seeing success that year, a lot more attention started being pointed on you, whether it was in the local media or just around the school. And I don't know if you ever really experienced anything like that back at Quincy, but what was it like having, you know, the spotlight on you? I know you're a real humble guy and you tried to deflect a lot of it to your teammates, but, you know, you were in the headlines of the newspaper articles and there were a lot of people trying to talk to you at the games. How did you handle, I don't want to call it celebrity, but more attention?
Well, I really don't try to think of it like that, you know. I try to think of it as I'm just like everyone else, you know.
Yeah.
I work my butt off to do what I can do on the football field. It's not just given to me, you know. It's not just I wake up every morning and I'm ready to do whatever I got to do on the football field. Every day I hit the field and every day I hit the weight room, and that's the hard work that I put in. And I know that people are going to talk crap. People are going to say that I'm cocky, but I truly believe that I'm not. And when people come up to me and try to talk to me, I talk to whoever it is. I don't care who you are. If you want to talk to me, I'll talk to you. You know, I'm a regular human being like you are. So if you're going to talk to me, I'm going to treat you just like I want to be treated. So it'd be like going up to a celebrity, and if I was the fan or whatever, I'd want them to talk to me, you know, just like I'm a regular human being. So I do the same to others.
It's a great mentality. So switching back to the football field, we'll kind of head into that final chapter, that senior year. You guys got out and recruited a lot of new talent because so much of that junior year graduated, the core of that team.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, you had a lot of young guys coming in there.
Yeah, we did. And we had a lot of younger guys come in. And this was tough because we went into a season my junior year knowing that we had seniors that they've been playing for 4 years, even though that they were getting spanked their freshman sophomore year. And we knew that they were going to be a big part of the team. And my senior year coming in, I was kind of scared. I was kind of nervous, you know, I can't lie. But I knew that someone was going to have to step up. Some people were going to have to step up, and figured out that some of them did, you know. Some younger guys came in and they took a role that a lot of guys, like, we had a good amount of seniors that could have played line, but they weren't fit for it. So we had a lot of younger guys have to step in and actually take the role from the senior, you know. So they ended up getting the job done.
Yeah, you guys got out to a 1-3 start, and I think it's interesting with something you said earlier. There were a lot of guys stepping into the fold between Chris Goggins, some of these other guys who didn't really know how to play football. You know, they had some of the raw skills that could have been transformed into football skills, but they were just getting started off. And you guys lost three of your first four games. And I was covering the team myself, thinking about what was going through your head at that time. I mean, you saw all the success your junior year, and now you're dealing with a team that just wasn't as fit to win. But what you said earlier, where the first time you stepped on the football field, you didn't really have a great idea how to play the game either. How much did that experience help you out in leading that team?
I feel like that's why I'm the way I am, because I started out as knowing nothing, you know, and whatever I can learn, doesn't matter what position, if I can learn that, I could teach it to someone. You know, and we did have a lot of new players come in that didn't play football much ever. Whenever they were talking, whenever coaches were talking, and whoever the coach was talking to, I'd make sure I'd go over there as a captain. I'm going to check up on them, saying, like, hey, if you don't understand it, man, just tell me. You know, like, you don't have to be – obviously, we have a coaching staff that's very – on you, they're strict, you know, and they get aggressive sometimes, and they'll scream at you, and if you don't get it and you say you don't get it, they'll scream even more, so you try to act like you understand it, you know. So I'd go out to a couple of kids and be like, oh, hey, bro, you don't have to, if you actually don't understand it, just let me know, like, this is how it goes, you know, and, like, I try to listen to the conversations that they'd have, and I feel like I did my part on trying to help them out.
Mm-hmm. So you guys ended up turning it around. You won two huge games in Lynn that got you back to 500. You won a game over Danvers that really propelled you guys into the playoffs that a lot of people didn't think you guys could win, but you guys came through. A lot of the young guys stepped up in that game. And then you get all the way, you have 340 yards against Malden, upset them, and you get into that Everett game. And I've never been more, and this is me not even playing in the game, I've never been more nervous, excited, just all these mix of emotions in my stomach, seeing them set up those stands for all these Everett people to come into Peabody. Now, you guys played Everett the year before, but that was in Everett. This time it's in Peabody on the new turf field.
Crazy.
You got buses
crazy.
Of Everett people coming in. You got buses of Peabody people coming from all over. What was the feeling going through you during that week, just seeing the hype build and build for this game against Everett?
It was quite phenomenal, to be honest. I knew that my team that I had been nervous about was ready to take on the challenge. The first three games we lost was rough because I didn't think we were going to do well, to be honest, because we had so many kids that didn't know what they were doing. But as the season went on, things started to come together, and once that Everett game came along, I knew that we'd be ready for that. And I was hyped up, you know. It was a feeling that I can't explain.
Yeah. And it was one of the craziest games ever. You guys got out to a lead early. You were holding on right into those final minutes. Then there was a tough call at midfield. You guys ended up punting with about, I think it was 1 minute left to go. And you were on the sideline during that final drive when Everett just drove the length of the field and ended up scoring with 14 seconds left, I believe. What was your reaction when you guys ended up losing in the final seconds of just one of the most emotional games you'll ever play in?
I was upset. I was upset that I didn't get that first down when I needed the first down. And I really put it all on me, you know, because I know we should have won that game. And going in there, all I could say in my head is, we're winning this, we're winning this, we're winning this. And once I saw that ball go up and John slipped, I knew that we had lost. And it was disappointing, you know?
Mm-hmm. How did you and some of your teammates sort of come together and recover from, I saw some of you guys crying. It was hard to even come up and speak to some of you guys after that game. The emotion was just so raw. How did you guys kind of band together and recover after that? And then in your final game in a Peabody uniform, you end up winning 52-0 over Saugus.
Well, we knew that we were a great team, and it was a fluke that they won that game. We knew that we were better than them, and we knew that they got lucky. You know, we had been playing tough the whole game, and the last few seconds of the game, it just ended up, we ended up slipping up, and that causes the game.
Mm-hmm. So in the aftermath of the season, now you end up coming to an agreement with Assumption College. What was the college process kind of like? I know it was frustrating for you to kind of get snubbed by a lot of these Division I teams saying you were too small, even for all the success you had on the field and off the field, just building a program as a whole. What put Assumption above all the other schools you were looking at, and what makes you feel like this is going to be a good home for you?
Assumption is a great school in the first place. It's not just great football, but it's a great academic school. And I want to take football as far as I can, but if not, I'm always going to have that backup plan, which is my education. And they gave me something that a lot of schools didn't give me. They gave me a chance, an opportunity, and that's just something I was looking for. You know, I have been looking for that for a long time. That it felt like a family when I went over there for orientation, and it just clicked into me, you know, and I made the decision.
For all the challenges you faced in the first place, just getting the Peabody and establishing yourself both as a football player and as a student, another issue came up when you were coming in this assumption with your citizenship. And there were worries that you weren't going to be able to get the scholarship with the school, and you and Coach Betts went on Fox News, and a lot of people were worried about you, but it ended up working out for the best. Can you take me through that experience and what you were feeling during that?
It was tough, you know. It was tough, but at the whole time I was thinking positive, and I didn't let my guard down, you know. I knew that what I wanted was right in front of me. I just needed one little thing, and I prayed to God every night, and I asked him to help me out, and he did help me out. You know, he got that little thing for me, and it came down to it that it helped me. This assumption came in and helped me out.
Yeah. So I want to talk about your mindset, too. It's sort of inspirational for me, myself. You're so positive all the time. You're such a high-energy kid. You're always grinding and being upfront with everyone about everything. What gave you that mindset?
To be honest, I think it was just how I grew up with... It was my parents before, you know. I always had that grind mentality, but who really helped me to cap it in a bottle and control it and be more successful was the Betancourt family. They helped me achieve a lot of things that I couldn't have achieved without.
So, in the end, 4 years at Peabody, I think you and Coach Betancourt both agree you guys really built something special there that a lot of people in the future can work with, and that's a football program that can make you a better person, give you opportunities. How satisfying was that, that it not only did something great for you, but now there's the potential that Peabody football can do great things for a lot of other people for years to come?
I think that it's going to be, from now on, I think Peabody football is coming back. And I'm glad that I could set the marker where it needed to be, you know, so it could start rolling forward and not backwards anymore.
So before we get on to some of these questions from the fans here, I got to ask you, the rumor around the streets is that you discovered Fetty Wap. I remember my buddy Rocco told me a year ago, I was like, you know, how'd everyone start getting into this guy? He had some of the hits of the summer last year between Trap Queen, My Way, and he's like, oh, I remember I was driving home with Doug, and he said, Dougie on the Ox, and he put on this song, and I'm like, whoa, Doug, what is this? And he said, it's this guy Fetty Wap. Did you discover Fetty Wap?
To be honest, I don't remember it like that, but I did like Fetty Wap for a long time. I did. Fetty Wap was one of my main guys in the beginning, so maybe that was true.
How do you use music, you know, when you're training or when you're getting ready for? What is music? How does music play a role in how you train as an athlete?
I'm a guy to listen to the song over and over and over again until I get sick of it. So I'll replay the song 100 times. You know, if the song hypes me up, I'm going to play it 100 times. And it will hype me up, and then I'll get sick of it, and I can never listen to it again. But it does get me going. It does get me going.
So we've been doing this thing now for a week on the Bobcast. We've been asking some of the listeners to send in some questions for both me and the guests. We call it the Bobcast questions, very cleverly. So we got a few questions right here. The first one from someone on Twitter, they said, where do you feel most relaxed and able to clear your thoughts? I'll let you start first.
I can't lie, probably on a football field. You know, just getting there after a good workout. After a good workout, you just feel good. You feel like you got the work done. And the first thing I usually wake up in the morning and think to myself is I got to go work out. And it doesn't leave my head until I do it, you know, and once I get it done, I clear my mind and I feel great.
This next one, do you play Pokemon Go?
No, I despise that game.
I'm right there with you. I'm going to actually talk about it later in the show, but I can't stand that game myself. What major sports athlete inspires you the most?
Probably Gronkowski.
Rob Gronkowski?
Yeah, he's a good dude, you know. He does a lot of behind the scenes stuff that a lot of people don't see, and they only see his reckless side.
The partying.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think we all would love to be a little more like Rob Gronkowski. Two more here. If you could choose one food that you could always eat with no negative health effects, what would it be?
Probably be buffalo chicken calzone.
I'm close with you there. I'd go with pizza. You can always find me at a pizza place.
Right.
And then before we go, there was a lot of rumors circulating around the internet these past few days with Celtics targets. Who do you think would be the best player for the Celtics to build a team around? Russell Westbrook, Blake Griffin, or DeMarcus Cousins?
I think Westbrook would be more ideal. He's a playmaker.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah, he's a killer. So, with that, we'll let you go. That's Doug Santos, Assumption College running back, former PBD running back. You can follow him at Dougie Fresh. 22 DougieFresh 22. You can watch his highlight tape there, and you can kind of follow along with his journey to come. Thanks for giving us this time tonight, Doug. I really appreciate it. Best of luck going forward, too.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
That's Doug Santos, and he's brought to us by Loot Crate. There's so many great pop culture movies, things going on with the summer blockbusters. And that makes this the perfect time for some of pop culture's unstoppable, unrelenting, and unbearable characters and objects. We've got something you can carry, something for your kitchen, and a cool figure to go with our monthly tee and pin, featuring two Marvel turns, plus Warcraft and Dragon Ball Z. No one crate should have all this power. Now, you gotta listen to this deal we're gonna bring to you. Loot Crate is a monthly subscription box service for the epic gaming and gamer items and pop culture gear. And for less than $20, you can get 6 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind gifts, and more. And for you to get a special deal, the deadline's coming up in the next few days, so you got to get on this. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe to Loot Crate and receive that month's crate when the cutoff happens. And when that cutoff happens, that's it. They're sending out those crates, and you can't get one for yourself until the next month. So head over to Loot Crate, and we have a special deal thanks to CLNS Radio. Make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/CLNS and enter the promo code CLNS to save $3 on any new subscription. Thanks a lot to Doug Santos for being with us today, and thanks to Loot Crate for backing the guest segment here on the Bobcast, a weekly tour of sports and pop culture. So from there, thanks for your Bobcast questions. We're doing that every week Wednesday. We're going to take submissions from you, the fans. We really appreciate you giving topics like that for me and my guests to discuss. We were kind of going long with the interview on Doug today. Normally I do a little more back and forth, but I just kind of want to get his takes on them before we go. And we're going to move on to the impactful stories in sports to wrap up another Bobcast. And that's brought to you by SeatGeek. Now, sports fans, we're always looking for tickets online. Like I always say, if you're not a season ticket holder, getting tickets to games can be a pain in the ass. You know, got to go find a scalper on the streets. You got to go through all these hoops and boundaries to get tickets from these online sellers, and they're upcharging. It's a business. You know, they got to make their money. They got to hit you with these fees that are just so tough to deal with as a consumer. But there's an alternative, SeatGeek. It's an app I use on my iPhone all the time, and they've come along and created an amazing app and website, too, that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And don't take my word for it. Try SeatGeek yourself. And we have a special deal for you that can save you $20 on your tickets, whether you're going to see the Red Sox, whether you're going to see the Summer League out in Las Vegas. They get the deals for you. And to get $20 back on top of those great deals on SeatGeek, just download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code RSB and SeatGeek. Imagine this. They'll send you $20. That's lunch. That's a nice movie ticket right there. You can do whatever you want with this $20. They're going to send it to you unlike any other ticket agency after you've made your first ticket purchase. That's promo code RSB on SeatGeek. And we move on to the impactful stories in sports. And, you know, there's not a lot of them flying around right now. A lot of athletes are off doing their own thing now. The MLB season's still churning along. We're not going to really get any major national action going in there until the trade deadline and that final burst to the playoffs, which we'll see on July 31st. But the ESPYs the other night, that's really the end of the official sports calendar. And I know a lot of people don't like the ESPYs. A lot of people think the awards are a load of crap. But I'll agree with that. You know, they pretty much just follow the SportsCenter trend and toss all the praise, attention, coverage, and in this case, awards at the champions. You know, the Cleveland Cavaliers got a lot of love last night between LeBron James, rightfully so. That incredible series, rightfully so. But Tyronn Lue, Coach of the Year, that doesn't really do it for me, and I don't think that does it for a lot of other sports fans out there. But if there's one thing the ESPYs can deliver, it's incredible moments. And between John Cena, I don't know if John Cena really does it for you as a host, but man, as a pop culture icon, they couldn't have done better. And the guy doesn't care. He got up there on that stage last night, started cracking those jokes. The one that stuck out to me the most was looking at LeBron James, Kyrie Irving in the crowd, and then Kevin Love behind them. And he goes, "Kevin Love, shouldn't you be off in the corner?" Kind of referencing how Kevin Love's misused in that offense and he's kind of seen as an outsider in that team, or literally just standing in the corner waiting for the ball. That was a great moment. And, you know, beyond that, John Cena, everyone knows John Cena from their childhood or even the Vine sensation, John Cena, at the end of these random little videos. Craig Sager. They had Craig Sager on the show, and after that Stortzgott speech the other year, you thought you couldn't be brought any closer to tears, but Craig Sager, who they gave 3 to 6 months to live after his leukemia reemerged when he thought it was in remission, he keeps working through it, inspirationally continuing to do the sideline duty in his awesome, crazy suits that we've become so accustomed to, and he just gets up there and delivers the most positive, heartfelt, inspirational speech you can imagine. This was my favorite quote from it. He said, "Whatever I might have imagined a terminal illness would do to my spirit, it summoned quite the opposite. The greatest appreciation for life itself," he said. "So I will never give up, and I will never give in. I will continue to keep fighting, sucking the marrow out of life as life sucks the marrow out of me. I will live my life full of love and full of fun. It's the only way I know how." And to see a guy facing brutal, brutal circumstances in his life, he doesn't know how much life he has left, and to see him display that kind of positivity, that's what you tune into the ESPYs for, to see a guy who's faced so much hardship like him. And I think it's a big reason we watch sports too, to see these athletes who a lot of the time face so much struggle, like we heard with Doug Santos earlier, and for them to have this amazing, inspirational, positive mindset on life, and for them to see success on the field, on the court, or anything like that, I think that's a big reason we tune in. And the best of the night, Chance the Rapper. I don't know how it came together that he ended up on the ESPY stage doing the inspirational, heartwarming, and powerful tribute to Muhammad Ali, one of the most outspoken, tremendous, poignant, and relevant athletes of his time. For him to come out and do this incredible song that he had written just days before, inspired by a speech that he watched of Muhammad Ali conducting an interview in, I think it was England? United Kingdom, somewhere like that. And Chance's art, this has been the year of Chance, between his collaboration with Kanye West, his official partnership with the White Sox, which was just disgracefully shamed upon by the New York Post, labeling him a gangster rapper, a dehumanizing one at that. They really just ripped Chance the Rapper to shreds, and it was so unfair. And if they got to view this performance he did last night, which caps off a year where he opened the Grammys to the internet, allowing artists to have this platform to see their production go from just a local internet level to a higher national level like he's been able to achieve for himself. He's helped Chicago's homeless doing these jacket drives and being an outspoken political force against the violence that goes on there, while showing immense pride in his city as well, and contributing a nice, refreshing, soulful hip-hop sound that's really starting to make waves within it. And him doing it with these people who came up with him, Donnie Trumpet, Jamelia Woods, Peter Cottontail, Teddy Jackson, the Social Experiment, his sort of concert band, and people that he's done collaborations with in the past. They're right there with him on the ESPY stage, one of the biggest stages in pop culture and sports, doing a tribute to one of the biggest names in sports and pop culture history, political history at that, with Muhammad Ali, and doing it in just such a beautiful way. So many eyes on him, so much pressure, and he delivers singing, which you don't normally see Chance the Rapper do, but he sang his heart out there on the stage, and I'm going to play it for you. It was so good. And this is courtesy of ESPN, the Disney company, ABC, whoever was in charge of that fantastic broadcast last night.
I'd like to know what you're going to do when you retire from boxing.
I really don't know. I want to say something right here. You all might, this might make you all think. When I get out of boxing or what I'm doing, I want to do all I can to help people. What's the best thing I can do? Get ready to meet God.
Back in time, I lost track of time. Rolling on the road. Christmas Eves and Valentine's seem like the days before. I came, I went, I did well. I did, I really meant well. But I almost missed my beat. So thank you for saving me a seat. I swell, ain't nowhere greater, ain't nowhere brighter, ain't nowhere better, 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 better. Ain't no one prettier, ain't no one wiser, ain't no one better, better.
God don't praise me because I beat Joe Frazier. God don't give nothing about Joe Frazier. God don't care nothing about England or America as far as your wealth. That's all he is. He wants to know, how do we treat each other? How do we help each other?
I was a rock
and roller back in my day.
But now I'm just a rock.
I've grown weary and old. We're as close as we'll ever be. I was gone, I had places to be. And of course, you're in the last place I look. I swear, ain't nowhere greater, ain't nowhere brighter, ain't nowhere better, 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 better. Ain't no one prettier, ain't no one wiser, ain't no one better, better.
And I'm still standing here, standing still. I won't be moved, I used to do. When I was a rock, I was a rock.
That was Chance the Rapper's performance last night at the Grammys. Just the highlight of the night. Like I said, if you don't like the ESPYs as an award show, come for the great moments, because they're always going to provide it. And it just culminated a fantastic year for Chance the Rapper, both on a social, political, and of course musical level. He's making waves, and it's just awesome to see a guy who was on the streets of Chicago, aimless, suspended from school, and then he turns to his library and makes a mixtape, and now he's making waves like this on the national stage. It's so great to see. So the ESPYs, screw the awards, tune in for those great moments. That brings me to Pokemon Go. Doug said it himself. He despises that game. And there's good reason to. It's just such a disgrace to me. I can't even hold back anymore. A week ago, people are running around stuck in their phones, playing this game, walking around the streets aimlessly, and I'm kind of like, whatever, just do your own thing. I'm normally not too judgmental of other people, but now that it's broken down into, as Heavy.com says, crimes, robberies, deaths, and other problems, I cannot accept this game anymore. This is by Jessica McBride. She says, the virtual smartphone game Pokemon Go is the newest rage, but it is causing and solving crimes. Some, as it turns out. It's also leading to a new host of law enforcement warnings and other bizarre incidents. The geocaching game allows people to find and capture Pokemon characters at various locations. Please use caution when alerting strangers of your location, one Missouri Police Department urged players after revealing that it was believed that robbers used Pokemon Go when targeting people playing the game. A campus police department at the University of Maryland reported students were robbed in a Pokemon Go-related incident, too. Although there have been other reports of crimes related to Pokemon Go usage, Rolling Stone says other stories that circulated the internet were fake, among them reports that a child in Chicago was stabbed after going into the wrong neighborhood, and one that a Florida boy had murdered his brother for his Pokemon collection. Those, of course, were false, but these stories were true. Armed robbers target Pokemon Go players in Missouri, Maryland, and other states. California Marines help catch suspected murder suspect while playing Pokemon Go. ABC7 reports that two men were playing Pokemon Go, and they helped police catch an attempted murder suspect in Fullerton on Tuesday. The news station identified the men as Seth Odega and Javier Soca, both Marines, and said that Socha's game froze, and he happened to look up and notice a man carrying a red plastic rose. The men watched as the man approached a woman with three children who ran away from him. The mother called 911, and the two Marines watched the man, the TV station said, and he ended up being apprehended. A teenage girl finds a dead body while playing Pokemon Go. In Wyoming, a teenage girl discovered a dead body while playing the game, CNN reports. Shayla Wiggins, 19, was catching virtual animals as she walked through a parking lot and gas station. Wiggins decided to explore the Big Wind Lit River, and she discovered a man's body laying face down in the water 6 feet to her left. Pokemon Go leads people to home with more than 46 sex offenders. Not good. Police spot increased trespassing and warn about car and other incidents with Pokemon Go. Of course, people trespassing on people's homes and walking through the streets while not paying attention. And even Pokemon and driving, which a police department tweeted, do not use mobile gaming apps while driving. And another said, eye on the road, Pokemon Masters. A ladder truck was cut off by Pokemon Go players in St. Louis. Pokemon Go players warned about using national cemeteries and disrespecting troops' graves. And the U.S. Holocaust Museum asked people to not play Pokemon Go there. And you see, I guess a few good things came out of this game, quote unquote. But for the large majority, people are just doing stupid things while stuck in their phones. And I'll admit it, I'm stuck in my phone too a lot of the time. I get distracted by the constant media age we live in. But I'll make an excuse for myself. At least I'm interacting with people when I'm talking about things on Twitter. With Pokemon Go, and I've never played it, I would never even think about playing it. But for real? Are you kidding me? You're going to walk into someone's house, you're going to disrespect the Arlington National Cemetery, you're just going to be so secluded in your stupid game, and I really think it's such a stupid game. I know a lot of people reminisce about Pokemon from their childhoods. I played Pokemon when I was a kid. A lot of people did. A lot of people had a lot of fun doing it. But there's people on college campuses goofing off playing this game. And I hate to sound like this, but really, when people are doing such stupid things with this game and walking around through the streets aimlessly and just unable to get their face out of it to pay attention to the world around them, I can't excuse that. And I know, like I said before, I get caught doing that with Twitter, reading news stories, stuff like that, but at least I'm interacting online. I know it's not the same as face-to-face interactions, and I know it's a problem that I try to avoid sometimes, but I don't feel the same way about video games on phones. I think it's just you stuck in a distraction, and it can lead you to do stupid things like cut off a tractor trailer while you're driving. It can cause you to walk into a Holocaust museum, completely ignoring your surroundings, and try to catch Pokemon there, I guess. I just can't get around to it. I think it's a disgraceful game. A lot of people are having fun doing it. I'm sure there's a lot of great Pokemon-related content with Loot Crate this month, but you'll never catch me playing that game, and you'll never catch Doug Santos, who we had on earlier, playing this game. And I think there's... I'm not going to say it. Anyways, late July is here, and so is the Aimless Rumor season. And earlier today, we got Blake Griffin rumors from Sporting News and Sean Devaney, who I'm not going to totally discredit. I know he's a good writer. I know he's well-informed. But Chris Mannix came out and squashed that rumor, like I kind of expected to happen. Today, Rudy Gay was never going to the Clippers in a deal that sent Blake Griffin to the Celtics. Come on. Doc Rivers has made some questionable moves, but none that questionable. Like Josh Everly, my man on Twitter, said earlier, if he ever made that trade, he should just step down on the spot. And then 2 days ago, Bleacher Report, the king of rumors, comes out and says that Russell Westbrook, and I know people kind of took this out of proportion, they said that, and this was Howard Beck, who's a very well-informed, respected NBA reporter himself. They said that he came out and kind of hinted at Russell Westbrook to the Celtics, but people kind of took that out of proportion because what he actually said was that Russell Westbrook's most likely trade destination would be Boston for all their assets. And I know my man Ryan on Twitter asked me, he said, why are these rumors always flying around the Celtics? And it's just because they have so much to give up. Danny Ainge doesn't want to give it up, but they have picks on picks on picks. Those two Brooklyn picks especially are so valuable. Jay Crowder is such a sought-after commodity, whether you want to move him or not. I'm sure a lot of teams like Marcus Smart. And the fact that Kevin Durant, of all people, like what the Celtics had in place and like the complimentary pieces he would have had here, and that's a fact. That goes to show how valuable some of these assets are, if not by some GMs, by the players themselves. But outside the NBA, where we're just getting aimless speculation and talk, the MLB is starting to see some real moves, and a very divisive one at that in Boston today. Drew Pomerantz heading to the Red Sox for the 15th best prospect in America, according to Baseball America. Anderson Espinosa, he's a right-handed pitcher, 18 years old, kind of been getting beat up in single A this year. Meanwhile, Drew Pomerantz, since 2014, has held a steady ERA under 3.0. Now, here's the three reasons I love this trade. And a lot of people hate it, but I'm going to back it up right now. First off, he's a controllable asset. He's arbitration eligible the next 2 years. He's going to get a raise with how successful he's been and if he continues that trajectory. But a controllable pitcher in this day and age when pitching comes at a premium is huge. And he's controllable through 2018. Plus, number two, he knows how to pitch. Now, the Red Sox have been getting decent production out of David Price, not what you want to see. Good production out of Rick Porcello, I'd say, and fantastic production out of All-Star Stephen Wright. But those 4-5 spots, you're just getting disgraceful showings, whether it's Henry Owens or Clay Buchholz or Joe Kelly or Roenis Elias, any of the guys they're bringing up from their system or the guys they had in place as plans this year just don't look major league ready. They're getting mashed. They can't command a game. And for that, a guy who's 8-7 and 17 starts, 2.47 ERA this year, 100 innings pitched, so he's eating innings, 115 strikeouts, which isn't too shabby, 41 walks, which is a little high, but not too bad. That's the guy the Red Sox needed, if not to win in the playoffs, but to get there in a good position in the first spot. With those 4 and 5 spots being almost automatic losses with some of the guys they had pitching there, the Red Sox weren't going to win the division, and they maybe weren't even going to win the wild card anyway, which is a complete toss-up. You don't want to be in that wild card game. And like I've said all year long, this is the year to buy into the Red Sox. This team's likable. They have an identity through their ups and downs. They've mashed the ball. That's their identity. They're the best offense in baseball. I'm standing by that. Plus, above all, David Ortiz is retiring. And I know some people don't want to hear that sanctimony, but with the way he's producing, and with how adamant he is that he's not coming back after 2016, you got to take advantage of David Ortiz being the best hitter in baseball. People don't understand how big of a hole that's going to be, not only in the mentality of the team, but in the production of the team going forward. And for that, I love the Red Sox being aggressive at this deadline, especially with their farm system so packed. Anderson Espinosa, huge potential. He might pan out, but for now, he's not even close to being MLB ready. And the fact of the matter was, the Red Sox needed some MLB ready arms. And not only is Pomerantz MLB ready, he's MLB successful since 2014. So he's going to be a nice plug-in as a lefty arm to this rotation. And with that, we'll put it show on wrap. Thanks so much for Doug Santos for being with us today. That was just a great story. I hope you took a lot from that, with how even a high school athlete can make a situation so good with sports that it benefits the people around him, it benefits the community, not only through entertainment standpoint, but from a opportunity standpoint. There's so much to be gained from having a great sports situation in place that can teach you life lessons, on and on and on. Thanks to Doug for being with us. We wish him the best at Assumption College next year. CLNS Radio, thank you for continuing to back the Bobcast. It's been a fantastic ride through 6 episodes. We've hoped you've enjoyed it, and we want to hear from you. What can make the show better? What can we do better with the show? And we have, if you haven't enjoyed our guests yet, some real all-stars coming in these next 2 weeks. Tim Britton of the Providence Journal joins us next Friday, just days ahead of the MLB trade deadline. You do not want to miss that episode, as the trade whirlwinds will continue to swirl around Boston and all the prospects they have to offer. It's a buyer's market. And Chad Finn, the legendary columnist for the Boston Globe, is joining us in 2 weeks. That's going to be the best podcast yet. I can tell you that now. I'm so excited to talk to him, an idol in the industry, someone you can learn so much from if you want to get in this industry yourself. And please, next Wednesday, I'm going to ask again. We want you to be part of the show. Send us your questions. I don't care if it's about the guests. I don't care if it's about me. I don't care if it's about the Celtics, the world of sports. I don't care if it's about life. I don't care if it's about fruit. I don't care if it's about Pokemon. Send us your questions. The Bobcast questions. It's a segment we're going to carry every week. And with that, we'll put this show on wrap. You can follow me, Bobby Manning, at Real Bob Manning on Twitter. You can follow the show at The Bobcast Show. And please like us on Facebook. Subscribe and rate on iTunes. CLNSradio.com/Bobcast. iTunes. You've really helped make this show a success. I'm going to find a way to thank you as we continue to grow and succeed going forward. And 6 weeks until I move to Syracuse, that's when the action really starts getting moving. And I thank you for continuing to take this ride through sports media, pop culture, all of that with me. With that, we're out. Enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the week. Enjoy the rest of your summer. And peace.